VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk. Overnight, Russian President Vladimir Putin launched an attack against Ukraine. Cities and bases were hit with airstrikes and shelling and civilians fleeing in droves. The death toll is mounting. Russia has been condemned by nations around the world as Putin has threatened consequences you have never seen to any country that tries to intervene. Just a short time ago, President Biden announced sanctions against Russia. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said this attack is the latest sign that the Russian president's desire is to bring back the Soviet Union. Well, joining us today with comment and analysis on this breaking news situation, we welcome Frank Gaffney, the executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy. It's a non-for-profit, nonpartisan educational organization established in 1988. He is host of Secure Freedom Radio, a nationally syndicated radio program heard weeknights throughout the country. In April of 1987, Mr. Gaffney was nominated by President Reagan to become the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy, the senior position in the Defense Department with responsibility for policies involving U.S. and USSR relations, nuclear forces, arms control, missile defense policy, and U.S.-European defense ties. He acted in that capacity, during which time he was also the chairman of the prestigious high-level group, NATO's senior political military committee. He represented the Secretary of Defense in key U.S.-Soviet negotiations and ministerial meetings, and then also was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear Forces and Arms Control Policy under Assistant Secretary Richard Perle. Frank, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
The pleasure is mine. You were kind enough to go through all of that resume, but since it seems we're going back to the USSR, I guess it's particularly relevant.
Yeah. Oh, and sadly so. And so much is unfolding, and it's happening so quickly. I know you've been monitoring the situation very closely. And if you would, just unfold for us this wide-ranging attack on Ukraine. Describe for us what has taken place thus far.
Well, it's come in two stages, or really technically, if you wish, three. And I think it's interesting to sort of analogize to what we saw in the run-up to World War II with Adolf Hitler. There was an Anschluss in which German forces were sent into Austria without resistance and essentially took over the place. That happened recently with Vladimir Putin sending troops into Belarus. From the Anschluss came the invasion of the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, an area that was populated principally by Germans. And Hitler said, well, we're just coming to, you know, join with our brothers in the Czechoslovakia. A similar kind of thing has happened with Putin going into the so-called Donbass region with military force, recognizing these two people's republics there and claiming that he was going to protect them from the ravages of the Ukrainians. And the truth of the matter is there were no ravages going on. In this case, the Russians had been engaged in efforts to subvert and essentially take down Ukrainian governance in that part of the country. And the reality is that wasn't sufficient. Like Hitler, Putin had other things in mind, and he's now moved on to try to take, I think, the entirety of the country.
The entirety of Ukraine. I mean, we're talking some pretty heavy military equipment. We've talking about some massive aggression on the part of Russia here.
We are indeed. We're watching, I think, Putin basically try to, use this as a laboratory for his theories about what he calls hybrid warfare, which involves the use of, psychological operations, economic coercion, cyber warfare, as well as now kinetic, as they say, physical violent force. And I have the feeling that, he'll be experimenting with an array of new weapon systems, particularly of the military kind. We've seen ballistic missiles used. We've seen cruise missiles used. And he has quite an array of exotic new weapon systems that I think he has in mind, demonstrating their power and seeing how effective they can be in coercing the Ukrainians into submission. And if they will not submit, I think he has in mind now actually conquering the country. There's a lot of speculation that he's not going to be interested in, occupying it, and that will be the next big test is, does he take that step, and can he succeed at it? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we know the answer yet. We'll see. The Ukrainians are promising, to make that a very difficult task. There will almost certainly be, there's talk out of the U.S. government of efforts being made by Putin to actually decapitate the government of Ukraine. And so I think what you can expect to see shortly is some kind of, Quisling, to go back to the German analogy, some sort of leader who's essentially a puppet of the Russians and will try to use the powers of the state to compel any resistors to desist or help track them down, that sort of thing. In other words, we have a lot of pretty horrible history in that part of the world, whether it's World War II, whether it's what Stalin did to the Ukrainians, whether it's going back to Catherine the Great, I guess, and the other czars. There's been a lot of pressure and pillaging and domination of Ukraine over the years, and I think that what we're seeing is Putin's intention to do more of it.
We're talking today with Frank Gaffney, executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, you mentioned new weapons. Is this something that is taking us or the world by surprise, or does intelligence already tell us what they have in their arsenal?
That's a great question. I think that intelligence has a reputation for omniscience, meaning that it sees all and knows all. Mm-hmm. That's unwarranted. And in this case, I think what we're going to find is, if he decides to use some of these weapon systems, that we will be surprised that he's doing so. On the other hand, how much our intelligence services are aware of, what he's not only got deployed and on the line, which is a lot, obviously, but what he's bringing up or has, stealthily deployed is a question that, again, I'm not sure we know just yet, but I will be surprised if we're not surprised. This is the bottom line.
Yeah, and if you could, what have been the targets? What have been the targets of Russia as they've gone into Ukraine? And also, if you could just do a comparison as to how Ukraine's military and their weaponry stacks up against Russia's.
Well, let me answer the second first, because it's easier. The Ukrainians have improved considerably their abilities militarily since Putin started this war against them back in 2014. But I think it's fair to say that they're no match for the Russian military. Mm-hmm. And I think that what Putin is determined to do is to demonstrate that through a tremendous amount of firepower being brought to bear. And as to the targets, it seems to be not so much the wholesale attack on population centers that may yet be in the offing, but principally going after military positions in the eastern part, the so-called Donbass region, across the border from Belarus, which, as I say, an occupied, and across the south, where NATO operations have brought sort of amphibious forces to bear from the Black Sea. And I think they've also, as I mentioned, tried to take out the leadership, or at least greatly diminish its ability to lead. And this has been one of the effects of some pretty serious cyber attacks. I don't think we've seen the full measure of what the Russians are capable of by any means, at least as far as I'm aware. They haven't done what they've done in the past, at least for periods of time, which is shut down the electric grid of the country. And that, again, may be in the offing.
Frank, also, if you could just give us your perspective on Russia's motivation for this invasion. I mean, do you concur that this is Putin's way of taking a step toward reestablishing the USSR?
I'm not sure whether he was intent on establishing the full Soviet Union or its evil empire, as my old boss Ronald Reagan used to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he is determined at a minimum to restore what he considers to be the greatness of Russia. And that would mean reconstituting some facsimile of the Soviet Union, the Russian Empire. And whatever brand you call it, Ukraine was a very important part of it. And I think that at a minimum he intends to get it back. There's talk, and I think those in the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, are very anxious because in his speech announcing that he was invading Ukraine, yesterday morning maybe, we saw him, you know, sort of alluding to his designs on the Baltic states. So whether it's, you know, aspiring to act there to reassert control, effective control, if not physical control, whether it's Poland, perhaps. These are things that are still TBD, but I think there's enough reason to be concerned that on the basis of what he has seen to date in terms of the West's response to his action so far, that he may not actually feel deterred from going further, but that's, as I said, to be determined.
Wow, amazing. Well, friends, we're talking today with Frank Gaffney, Executive Chairman and Founder of the Center for Security Policy. And in just a moment, we're going to be taking a break. And when we get back from that break, we're going to delve into another side of the equation of all of this, and that is looking at how we ever got to this point. And what about the reaction that's coming from the West, the reaction that's coming from President Biden at this time, the sanctions that are being employed, and also the that which is coming from NATO and other Western nations that are condemning these actions right now as well. So the question certainly is, would we have ever gotten to this point under a Trump administration? So we'll be evaluating many of these things after the break. Stay with us. Our topic today, dealing with Russia invading Ukraine. Frank Gaffney is our guest. Back in just a moment here on Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, some lakes are shrinking in size. What's causing this?
Chris, the Earth's average temperature has been rising over these past few years. But is this a long-term trend? We know that over the decades, the average temperature has gone both up and down, so we wonder what's next. The current warming trend, however, has caused an increase in evaporation from some inland lakes. One lake is in the Middle East. The salty Aral Sea has shrunk dramatically, exposing a several-mile-wide salt beach. This has even affected the search for Noah's Ark. Salt has been picked up by the wind and blown all over the Middle East, including the glacier on Mount Ararat, causing it to melt quite a bit. Inland lakes are by and large leftovers from Noah's flood and the ice age which came after it. How much longer will they last? We'll have to wait and see. And that's the Back to Genesis truth.
Visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Frank Gaffney with us, executive chair and founder of the Center for Security Policy. And I know, Frank, you've been covering these issues for decades, and you write about them as well. You've got a lot of information on your website. Tell us about it.
Well, we do. The Center for Security Policy's website, the easy way to remember it is securefreedom.org. You can also find it at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We cover a lot of waterfronts with that web resource, but I would also commend to your audience, if I may, two others. One is presentdangerchina.org, which is the website for the Committee on the Present Danger China, which I'm the vice chairman. And also one that sort of pulls together our radio and television and commentaries and other materials at securingamerica.tv.
Okay, I'm going to quickly repeat these. That last one was securingamerica.tv, presentdangerchina.org, securefreedom.org, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Those are the websites we just gave out. So we see what's unfolded. We've been told this was going to happen. Of course, Vladimir Putin denied this was going to take place, that there was removing forces, et cetera. But looking at the Western side of this, how did we get to this point? I mean, would we have seen an invasion under a Trump administration?
Well, I had the privilege of being in a room last night with the president down in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, and he certainly doesn't think so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think based on, you know, what we actually observed, it seems unlikely. What has prompted this is partly, of course, the ambitions that Vladimir Putin has long nurtured. And those are, by the way, not just the reacquisition of Ukraine, literally, you know, by seizing it or by simply bending it to his will. But also, I think a larger agenda, which many of us have not really understood as we should, and that is Vladimir Putin is an old KGB thug who was active in the Cold War in Germany. And he says, with some regularity, that the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century was the fall of the Soviet Union, which is a pretty extraordinary thing, given the other contenders for that dubious distinction, like World War One and World War Two, or maybe just the Holocaust. These are terrible, terrible things, and it gives you a sense of both his abiding resentment, as well as, I think, his determination to get even against NATO and most especially the United States, who obviously was the leader under President Reagan, especially in this effort to take down the Soviets. You remember, we win, they lose, being his shorthand for his strategy for doing just that. So all of that's going on, but what has made the difference, I think, you know, is suggested by your question, and that is Vladimir Putin is a thug, and one thing thugs are very attuned to is the relative power they have versus others. And in this case, I think there's very little question but that he senses in the person of Joe Biden and his administration an opportunity to get even with NATO, the United States, and more to the point, to do whatever he wishes with respect to probably not just Ukraine, but perhaps other places as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and coming from the Biden administration, I mean, so far leading up to this point, he had promised, and I quote, swift and severe cost to Russia if they would invade Ukraine, promised sanctions would be placed on Russia. And I know he had the press conference just a short time ago announcing some of these sanctions. What actions is he taking against Russia at this point, and is it enough?
Well, I confess I've been on the road, and I didn't hear the press conference today. I assume that, you know, these are more or less the sanctions that he's been talking about for some time. They've been kind of ratcheting them up a bit since these aggressive actions began, having initially said that, you know, there might not be any response if there were a minor incursion, and then kind of walking that back. And then when the invasion took place initially in the Donbass region, the two provinces there, the official line out of the administration at the beginning was, well, this isn't an invasion. This is more of what they've been doing there. They did back away from that, too. So we've seen the beginnings of these sanctions now rolling out, and I guess, you know, some further. As best I can tell, they're confined to sort of economic actions and some efforts to impede the flow of technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the quotes from today.
Truthfully, that's probably not enough to adjust thinking, let alone deter his further aggression.
And as far as the assets and so forth, the bank assets, I'm confident that Putin figured out what was going to be happening and made arrangements for this. But from Joe Biden earlier, we've now sanctioned Russian banks that hold together another around $1 trillion in assets, he told reporters, and that the U.S. had already cut off Russia's largest bank from the U.S. financial system. And today he said we're also blocking four major banks. That means every asset that they have in America will be frozen. And among the newly sanctioned banks is VTB, Russia's second largest bank, $250 billion in assets. And he has not cut off, though, Russia's access to the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, or the SWIFT system. I don't know if that will be coming forth as well, but I guess looking more at the economic side of things here at this point.
Well, yes, they've made it very clear that there were not going to be military steps taken. Mm-hmm. That was off the table. So what they have is an array of these sorts of steps. And, you know, I'm not cavilling about the need to do those sorts of things, and it probably will be the case that they're reserving on the SWIFT system sanctions until something else that's horrible happens. Mm-hmm. But the point is, I think you're right. Putin has anticipated and generally discounted all of those, and I think his own assets are probably not going to be impacted. And,
right.
And he's, by some accounts, the richest man in the world. So there's a lot of assets out there, and it will be, seized or otherwise denied him. But the piece of this that probably matters most, honestly, is the degree to which Putin thinks he has the ultimate hole card, if you will, namely Europe's dependency on his natural gas. And there was a lot of talk that, the Germans stepped up and denied him the opportunity to sell that natural gas through this new Nord Stream 2 pipeline, as it's called. It's complete at this point, thanks to Joe Biden eliminating the impediments to its completion that Donald Trump had put in place. And the president, former president, spoke about that last night, by the way. But the point is that there is another pipeline that is still selling Russian gas to Europe, the so-called Nord Stream 1 pipeline. As best I can tell, there's been no impediment to that continuing. And even with respect to the Nord Stream 2 situation, at the moment, it was on hold anyway, for procedural or paperwork reasons, apparently. So for the next couple of months, it's sort of this status quo ante, the situation that prevailed before, rather than evidence of the Germans, you know, actually doing something to really punish the Russians. And I don't think they feel they can, honestly. Their own economy, their own society is so dependent upon that Russian energy, which is a terrible strategic mistake, and I'd like to think that they've learned their lesson here, but I doubt it.
Frank Gaffney with us here today. Frank, another side of all of this. I mean, we saw the United States mocked by nations after our failures in our Afghanistan withdrawal there and how that was all happened. What message is this sending to the world? And to the world, I'm meaning nations like China, like Iran, like North Korea. What message is this sending to them? Are they feeling emboldened by what's going on?
100%. You can take that to the bank. I think that what Putin and Xi Jinping, the dictator of communist China, agreed when they met on the 4th, I believe it was, of February, on the margins of the opening of the, well, I call them genocide games, the Winter Olympics in Beijing, was certainly an understanding. It's, I think, pretty evident even in the published open version of the agreement. And almost certainly there are secret codicils that lay out even further how China will have the back of Russia in the event it does something against NATO's interests in Ukraine, unsaid, but that was clearly the intent. And that Russia would have China's back for what it, I think, clearly intends to do to Taiwan and perhaps India, too, is to be seen, possibly both. So the point is that what I think is happening at the moment is a situation in which every bad guy on the planet, not just Xi in China, but the Iranian mullahs, for example, the North Korean Kim Jong-un, possibly Pakistan, possibly Turkey, various jihadist enterprises, Taliban most obviously, communists now running nations throughout our hemisphere, perhaps as well, all seeing a window of opportunity here in which they can act aggressively against the various targets that they aspire to take over or control or otherwise exploit. That's the thing that's so alarming about this, is that it's not just Russia. And my fear has been for some time is that when one of them takes the sort of step that Putin has taken, the rest of them will see that opportunity made irresistible.
And that opportunity, I mean, are we in a vulnerable time right now where communist China would see where we are so caught up in what's happening with Russia, Ukraine, or are sending troops further into Germany right now, that they might go ahead and make their move in such an opportune time for them?
I believe that is a very high likelihood, yes. There's a timeline that I think Xi has had for some years during his administration and probably beforehand, but it has been widely thought that it isn't quite yet that they would consider themselves ready to go against Taiwan. And that may be, but I think that the window of opportunity, as I say, is so tempting, and I suspect that they are going to find it irresistible, sadly, unless we act in a rather more dramatic way than we have.
And, folks, we're going to take a quick break here. Frank Gaffney is our guest. Our phone number to Crosstalk here, 800-733-9829. Your questions here for Frank Gaffney here today, executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy, 800-733-9829. We'll go back here in just a minute on Crosstalk on VCY America.
From Ray Comfort and Living Waters comes the dramatic film Audacity, tackling a very divisive issue today, homosexuality. Challenged by a co-worker to defend his convictions about homosexuality and same-sex marriage, Peter has to consider if he has the courage to stand for what he believes, even at the risk of losing a friendship. How will he respond when faced with a harrowing life or death experience? Audacity uses a unique approach to address a very contemporary issue and challenges the viewer to reach out and approach the greatest spiritual need everyone faces. Audacity is a 55-minute powerful dramatic film that will impact your life. Get your copy of Audacity for a donation of $5, or 5 copies for a donation of $18, 10 copies for $25 when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Frank Gaffney with us today, Executive Chairman and Founder of Center for Security Policy. Again, those websites, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, or I guess you can remember that as securefreedom.org. Also, presentdangerchina.org and securingamerica.tv. Frank, do you believe that there is more aggressive action that is needed from the U.S. at this time other than what's being taken?
Well, aggressive action is a bit of a subjective judgment. I am a big believer in what, as I say, my former Commander-in-Chief Ronald Reagan described as peace through strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the only national security policy that has actually proven over time to be successful. I think we've gotten ourselves, as we've been discussing, in this mess because we've abandoned that, particularly under the Biden administration, but arguably to varying degrees, some of his predecessors, particularly on the Democratic side, who have not followed that philosophy and applied it as we should have. So I guess my view of this is that we have to, you know, contend with the reality that we don't have the strength that we need, but we should be doing everything we can to demonstrate that we have both sufficient strength and the will to bring it to bear that I think can help affect the calculations of some of these guys that, you know, they actually cannot act with impunity at the great expense of our, you know, vital interests or our allies or, you know, the world's security, for that matter.
Yeah.
And I think that's a task that requires, yes, some of these economic initiatives, to be sure, but also, just to give you one example, I would say we need to reverse the Biden policies on energy.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes, yes.
You know, rebuilding, our energy independence with pipelines and so on, but also helping our allies become less dependent on Russian energy or German-Russian energy, if you will, by, you know, selling more of our liquefied natural gas, for example, which will require, you know, sort of kickstarting its production and export. Another example is, I think we have to be ending the practice that this administration has engaged in and continues to, of really hollowing out our military, powerfully disabling it, I think, in important respects, certainly demoralizing our men and women in uniform, and whether it's, you know, the critical race theory brainwashing that they're doing, which is so offensive to patriotic men and women in uniform,
mm-hmm.
whether it's purging people who feel that way, which they've been doing, or whether it's now these vaccine mandates and the effect that's having driving good people out of uniform,
yes.
Some of them being, you know, also alienated by those other considerations.
Right.
But this has to stop. This is the only military we have. And no matter how you slice and dice this, whether it's just what Putin is doing and his calculations, or whether it's Putin and Xi, their combined efforts, whether it's the other lesser powers, but all sort of allied with these other two, who are all, you know, champing at the bit to get into rumble with us. That needs to be discouraged. And I think one of the first things that would be very salutary is to say, hey, you know, we're going to get our military back in the business of deterring our adversaries and being mm-hmm. ready to do that.
Just one more thing, and I know our phone lines are packed out here, but as some of the responses, and I can't ignore this, but some of these responses of those representing the Biden administration, in my opinion, are just off the charts when it comes to insaneness. And I'm looking at Biden's climate Czar John Kerry, who reacted to all of this going on, and here's what he said. Quote, there will be massive emissions consequences to the war, but equally and importantly, you're going to lose people's focus. You're going to lose certainly big country attention because they will be diverted, and I think it'll have a damaging impact. He said, I hope President Putin will help us stay on track with respect for what we need to do on climate. It's insane. I mean, his response to this invasion that's going on and all that's at stake, and he's concerned about so-called man-made global climate change?
Yeah, John Kerry is one of the sillier people in government, and this fixation of his, which is shared, let's face it, by others in the administration,
yes.
He just is on point on it, is can only be explained by the kind of behavior that he's exhibited throughout his life, which has been betraying our country, just to put a fine point on it, going back to Vietnam. And I would just say about this that the thing that's so insidious about it is when you tell a guy like Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping, for that matter, or, well, any of these characters, and the Iranians have had a fairly long and sordid relationship with John Kerry, by the way, going back to that joint comprehensive plan of action that he helped engineer in the Obama years. But any one of these thugs reads statements like that as, well, they're not serious about resisting us. They think that our cooperation on X, climate change usually, for him, yeah. for sure, is more important than, you know, resisting us as we invade and conquer and even destroy, you know, sovereign yep. nations who are part of the free world.
Yes.
And this is more than just insane, really. It is, yeah. it is recklessly irresponsible,
right.
and it is inviting worse behavior from all of these characters.
And we saw this example just earlier with John Kerry as it related to communist China, for ignoring the human rights abuses taking place there in order to accomplish his end goal of taking control of the masses here by limiting so-called, you know, the carbon emissions. So just bizarre. We've got a Frank calling from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Frank, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Mr. Gaffney, I'd like to know what your thoughts would be on the proposition, on the idea that the ongoing push by the United States, which is bipartisan, by the way, over various administrations, and NATO's efforts to expand eastward toward Russia has contributed to this, and shouldn't the NATO have gone the way of the Berlin Wall and the Soviet Union years ago?
Okay, thank you, Frank. In Oshkosh, Frank Gaffney.
I'm not sure I heard all of the question, but I think I got the thrust of it. Look, I think what was done, and one can debate whether it was advisable or not, was to try to ensure the countries that had been essentially sold out by the West at the end of the Second World War, essentially made part of Stalin's sphere of influence and suffered, you know, 6 decades or so of oppression as a result, were entitled to be part of the West and enjoy the benefits of security guarantees from other freedom-loving nations. And, you know, one of the nations, interestingly, doesn't get a lot of attention these days, that they got a promise from Bill Clinton, no less, back in 1994, that we would provide security guarantees was, wait for it, Ukraine. We did it on the basis that we were so intent on disarming them, getting them to relinquish the nuclear weapons, which, frankly, if they still had them, I suspect this would not be going on at the moment. And they were sufficiently concerned that something like this might eventuate that they insisted that if they were to give them up, you know, the United States, other major powers in Europe, had to commit that they would come to its assistance if this did, in fact, play out. And at the time, the Russian government actually, you know, promised not to invade as well. So there's a lot of history here, as I say, and I think that given where we are, honestly, it wasn't going to make a difference to a guy like Vladimir Putin whether these countries were inching NATO's sort of defensive perimeter closer to Russia or not. I think that is simply a pretext for the imperial ambitions to which he is, frankly, openly admitted.
Let's go to Salina, Kansas. We have Russell calling. Russell, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Jim. I've got to respond to that Kerry comment, man. I think Kerry can rest assured that Biden is using all American, I mean, all, excuse me, all electric tanks. But I had a question. How does this fit in? Putin doesn't sound like a New World Order person. Where does he stand on that? Thank you for my call.
Okay, thank you. Where does Putin stand on a New World Order, the Great Reset topic here, Frank?
Well, it's a great question. I think he has very much in mind a New World Order. In fact, he and Xi pretty much said so in their joint statement issued back on February 4th. It's just not the New World Order that we've been sort of encouraged to believe would somehow result in a better, happier place.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the not-so-great reset. They have in mind, and indeed, if you take a look at that statement, it's chillingly cynical, because it starts off with professions by both of these countries to human rights and democracy. And if there's one thing we know about both Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping and the, you know, apparatuses that they came from and lead, they have no interest in what we would call human rights or democracy, let alone both. And for that matter, when they talk about their reset, when they talk about their grand design for a new world order, if you will, it's one in which human rights and democracy do not feature in any reasonable meaning of those words, and their control is absolute. And frankly, it will be China's control, because Russia has become increasingly, despite its vast nuclear arsenal and Putin's, you know, thuggish behavior, very much the junior partner in it.
We've got Ed calling from Spencer, Tennessee. Ed, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. My question is this. Do you think this war is a prelude to the Gog and Magog war, the hook in the jaw of Ezekiel 38 and 39? Do you think the war will embolden Putin to attack Israel at a later date?
Okay. Thank you, Ed. And I don't know, our guest is really a prophecy expert as such like this. Do you see this as heading to something bigger?
I fear, without, you know, professing any special knowledge of end times, let me just simply say that I think there is something bigger coming. I fear it really has the potential to be a global war. Will Israel be embroiled in it? I think that's a very high probability, either because of what the Iranians do, or because the Israelis take preemptive action to try to prevent them from doing just that, perhaps with nuclear weapons.
Thank you for the call here, Ed. A quick 60-second break. We'll come back to more of your calls here on Crosstalk at 800-733-9829. We're talking today about the Russian invasion into Ukraine, and Frank Gaffney is our guest. We'll give you his websites again following the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, I discovered a video clip of a scientist speaking at the World Economic Forum in 2020, and he declared many things. He declared that they, the scientist and the transhumanist, were going to hack the human brain. They were going to hack the human brain and control people through technology. He said we no longer have to rely on science by evolution, but science by intelligent design. And the intelligent designer, we're going to be the elite. He said no longer the God above the clouds, but the God or the elite in the computer clouds. And then he went on to say this. that when we look back at the coronavirus pandemic, we will see that it ushered in a new regime of surveillance under the skin. A new regime of surveillance under the skin. The Bible says that's coming. It's the mark of the beast. Don't fear, my friends. Bible prophecy is being unfolded, and it reveals that God is still in control and always will be.
Got a paper to jot them down. The website's here, securingamerica.tv, presentdangerchina.org, securefreedom.org, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Frank Gaffney with us today, executive chairman and founder of Center for Security Policy. Our lines are packed. La Crosse, Wisconsin, we have Bill calling. You're on the air.
Hello. This right here also has another meaning. If there's one meaning, there can be 10. But Obama went to Russia, and he told Putin that he wanted to have a parade. And Putin replied, he said, "Do you see this cross on my chest?" He says, "I do not believe in that, and I will not have gay parades." And he also has a Bible in every hotel room. Obama told him there would be sanctions placed against him. And so I'm just wondering where, when the Babylon the Great, which is the United States, is promoting and exporting child trafficking, sodomitism, pedophilia, transvestitism, when King Solomon got away from God's law.
Bill, right to your question, please.
Allowed his enemies to come into conflict.
Hello, Bill, right to your question, please.
Do you not think that there is a religious connotation to the mess that we're in, where God is giving us a message?
Okay. Well, indeed, I see that taking place. That there is a message for us through all of this. But he was bringing up several moral-related issues in which the U.S. has caved, that Russia has not. Are there implications there at all, Frank?
Well, I personally do believe that we're in some danger of losing God's grace on a whole host of scores. And we don't need to get into that in our little bit of time remaining. Let me simply say, people like Vladimir Putin, people like Xi Jinping, mullahs of Iran, Kim Jong-un, and so on, I think can only come away further convinced of the moral and spiritual and, more to the point, the physical decline of the United States, and therefore that, again, they can act without regard for our threats or particularly any promises that we will punish them for behaving as they are. Mm-hmm. So I think the basic point is this. You do not want to be conveying in any way, shape, or form to such adversaries weakness. And I think that's how they're reading us in that regard as well.
Peter in Burbank, California, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I want to ask Mr. Gaffney, how long do you think it will take to reverse Biden's current energy policy and hopefully bring back Trump's, that is, put back the Keystone XL pipeline and reallow the oil leases on federal land? In other words, flood the world's markets with oil and really hurt Putin and Russia, because this is how he is basically financing his invasion. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, so we've had 14 months of Biden just totally unraveling this nation on so many of these different things. He's asking, how long would it take to get back on track?
Yeah. Well, sadly, some things, including major infrastructure investments like the pipelines, there are, I think, two of them that he has canceled here in the United States. By the way, we talked about Israel earlier. He's also interfered with a pipeline from Israel to Europe, which would also have had the effect of diversifying the sources of energy that the Europeans desperately need at the moment. But there are things that we can do, I think, very quickly. I believe that an awful lot of natural gas and oil can be recovered quickly if we simply make arrangements to get the price and the governmental policy right. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that, you know, does require turnaround. But, you know, Joe Biden said the other day, in connection with the you know, assessment he was offering as to what Putin was up to, that there was going to be some sacrifice and suffering entailed for Americans, but that he was going to do everything in his power to try to reduce the burden of these higher energy prices. Well, there are some very, very practical, very near-term things that I believe he could do. And if he will, it will relieve the burden, yes, but it will also have the effect that the caller just suggested of, I think, undermining, again, Putin's calculus that there won't be cost to him, and that, in fact, to the contrary, the prices of oil and natural gas won't continue to skyrocket to his huge benefit.
William is calling from East Troy. You're on the air, William.
Mr. Gaffney, appreciate your what you do with Secure Freedom, with, you know, and helping Americans understand things. Question, sorry, a little tongue-tied. Wondering, are we seeing the effects of a failed Clinton policy when they gave China most favored nation status back in the 90s? And is it possible the CCP has been putting money into Hillary's coffers over the years?
Oh, I wish I could say that it's exclusively their fault. I think you're right that the World Trade Organization admission was a huge mistake, and that did happen on Bill Clinton's watch and at his direction. And yes, he was paid handsomely for it. I think there's no question about it, including campaign funds. You may remember Johnny Chung, I think it was implicated in transferring very substantial sums directly to the Clinton team. But the point is that there have been Republicans who have made this mistake as well, the theory being that if we only enrich the Chinese Communist Party, it will become more like us, as will China itself. And that has been wrong, I think, from the get-go, back when Henry Kissinger sort of first conjured it up. And it has gotten more and more untenable ever since. And those who still cling to it, those who still insist on pretending otherwise, those who believe that, we can, for example, transfer trillions of dollars from American investors' funds to the Chinese Communist Party are not simply deluding, well, at least the investors, mm-hmm. but arguably themselves. They are making the Chinese Communists vastly more dangerous in the process, and that's a terrible mistake for all of us, I believe.
William, thank you for the call, and folks, we've just simply run out of time here. We just have seconds remaining. Want to get the word out here. Again, those websites, securefreedom.org, presentdangerchina.org, securingamerica.tv. Frank Gaffney, our guest here today from the Center for Security Policy. And Frank, thank you for giving a significant amount of time here to address a very critical issue facing our nation and the world.
Jim, thank you for giving me the time. Terrific to be with you.
Frank Gaffney here with us here today, and thanks for being with us. And friends, thank you also for joining us here today on Crosstalk, keeping you informed on critical issues that are impacting our nation and our world. God bless you, folks. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.